date which still had not been determined. Tessa had never been happy being idle. She should see if Sam could find Lara, and possibly she could come for a visit. Maybe she could stay here with her. They could get to know one another all over again, like when they were little and their mother was still alive, before they were forced to live apart. Maybe she could... She didn't know. What, be a big sister to her again? Tell her all about her prison life? No, that wasn't a topic Lara would want to discuss. Money, drugs, and the latest fashions were her little sister's passions, in that order. Without money, there were no drugs or fancy designer dresses.
Are you okay?
Whirling around, Tessa almost jumped out of her skin. Damn, don't sneak up on me like that! She shouted at Sam, who stood in the doorway holding two glasses of iced tea. Remember where I came from, she reminded him, but neglected to tell him what could happen in prison when someone sneaked into the showers, behind you in the cafeteria line, when a guard's attention was elsewhere. No, he didn't need to know about that.
Sorry, you looked like you were a million miles away, he said, and handed her the glass of tea.
She took a drink of the tea, reveling in its icy sweetness. It's been so long, she observed, and she took another gulp of the tea. The ice, I mean. We don't get ice in prison. Sam appeared uneasy.
It's the little things, I guess, he said,
as he stood in the entryway to the bedroom, eyes downcast. Tessa picked up on his awkwardness, and it took a few seconds for her to realize why. They were in her and Joel's bedroom. Obviously, he would feel uneasy here. Or she assumed that was the cause of what she decided was his uneasiness. But she didn't really know him on that level, so she could be wrong. Disturbed by his interference, she would have to put off going into the girls' rooms for another time when she was alone. She didn't want him or anyone else around when she entered their rooms. Let's go downstairs, she said. Though she dreaded doing so, she had to get used to the idea of living in her former home. The changes could not block out her memories of the life she had shared here with Joel and the girls, or the scene she had come home to on that long-ago day. Downstairs, Tessa was at a loss as to where she could sit and not see the pool area, so she plopped down on the bottom step. She needed to know why Sam had not gutted the pool area. Of all the spaces to leave untouched, it was the worst. Sam sat beside her, and she scooted as far away from him as the step would allow.
I don't bite, he said.
Of course you don't. I'm just making room for you, she explained, then patted the extra few inches her moving gave him. Clearing her throat, then taking a deep breath before she lost her courage, she asked, Why didn't you fill in that goddamned pool? Anger spewed from her mouth, surprising her. Sam shook his head.
I wanted to, Tessa, but I couldn't.
Why not? His face clouded with an emotion she couldn't name.
It's a crime scene, he explained. I just couldn't. It would have meant giving up all hope.
A crime scene? All hope? But it's... I don't understand, was all she could say. All these years, why can't I just excavate the entire area? Tessa forced herself to look out the wide expanse of windows. The evidence was collected, she insisted, stating what seemed to her to be an obvious truth. It made her nauseated just to say the word evidence, because throughout her short trial, the only evidence had been the remains of her precious family. Tears filled her eyes, and she knuckled them to staunch the flow.
I could never bring myself to destroy this part of the property. It's always been in the back of my mind that the day would come when a second look was needed. Something in my gut told me to hold off, Sam said. Tessa didn't understand. Is there some new evidence you know about that I don't, besides Rosa? She knew that with today's forensics, the possibility of new evidence was not at all unreasonable. There had been dozens of cases where evidence from as far back as 50 or more years had exonerated those who were innocent. Or, as with some arson convictions, even established that no crime had been committed in the first place. She didn't believe there was any actual physical evidence that could change the outcome of her case, but she admitted to herself that she was not an expert in that area. She was innocent, but a jury of her peers had convicted her of 3 counts of murder in the first degree. Understandably, she did not have much faith in the criminal justice system. Sam turned to face her.
I don't think so, but I can't be 100% certain. I didn't want to take the chance in case there was any.
You should have destroyed the entire grounds, she said, motioning to the pool area. It's the one area that I would have wanted demolished. She could hear the frustration in her voice, the sheer inconceivableness of Sam's lack of forethought. Screw evidence. There was nothing to find.
I'm sorry, Tessa. I simply do not agree, was all he said.
She took a deep breath, gazed at the unfamiliar shoes she wore, the new leather waiting for her to break in. She removed them and the footies she was wearing. She had not worn a normal shoe in years.
You hate the shoes? Sam asked.
No, she quickly said. It's just that my feet feel confined. It's been a while. It'll take time for me to get used to this. She pointed at the shoes and the ankle monitor. Flip-flops and socks in prison. What we were allowed to wear. No sneakers. The shoelaces could be used as a weapon or, and she had thought of this more than once, a means of taking one's own life.
Damn, he said in a hoarse whisper. I didn't think. I'm sorry for all of this.
He gestured toward the pool area.
If you're okay with it, I can see that it's filled in.
What if there was evidence that the police had missed? Having no clue what could have escaped their eagle eye, and remembering that to her way of thinking there really had been nothing one could call an investigation since they had decided she was guilty from the get-go, she couldn't really disagree with Sam's decision just yet. The memories would be with her no matter what was present beyond the wide expanse of windows. Her memory of what she had found in that pool could never be erased.
No. Leave it as it is. For now. I'm not saying I believe there is still evidence, and even if there is, how are you going to go about your search?
You're the sole owner of a giant pharmaceutical company with connections to forensic specialists across the country. I can get the ball rolling or not. Your call.
Should she? She hated to get her hopes up. But at this point, what did she have to lose? She had already lost everything that mattered to her. Go ahead. Do whatever you have to do.
Are you sure?
Sam asked.
I know this isn't what you had in mind when you came home, but I just couldn't bring myself to destroy the pool area.
She didn't tell him that it would have been the first area she would have chosen to destroy had she been given the opportunity. But that was the past, and the past was prologue. And in her case, it was all she had to cling to. Her entire life of happy memories resided here in this house. Just do whatever you have to. I don't want to know the results unless they provide some new lead. She could not bring herself to use the word evidence again.
All right. I'll get started first thing tomorrow, Sam promised. Or I can start right now. You're the boss, he said, then added,
I'll make sure Lee is on board before I call in the big guns.
She rolled her eyes. I think tomorrow is soon enough. I need some time to get used to all this. She motioned with her hand to the space in front of her. Freedom. Temporary, I know. Suddenly changing the topic, she said, I want to see Lara. Does she know about my release?
I told her when I spoke to her last week.
For a brief moment, Tessa's heart lightened. But then she realized that her sister was basically nothing more than a complete stranger to her now, and had been for many years before now. Why the hurry to reunite? To bring up bad memories and broken promises of the past, she thought, but kept it to herself.
And? She coaxed. She told me she would call when she could,
Sam informed her. Tessa nodded but remained quiet, wondering exactly what Lara was up to that would prevent her from making a simple phone call. Eventually, she would have to see Lara. She felt she had no choice, but she wasn't going to push the issue with Sam. After a few seconds of uncomfortable silence, she cleared her throat. You'll let me know then? And that was all she said.
Of course.
Itching to go back to the master bedroom to search the boxes, she grabbed her shoes and stood. I'm not sure how this is supposed to work, but I would like some time alone. To explore the house, familiarize myself, I don't know, just get used to the outside world. She didn't know any other way to explain herself other than just to say what was on her mind.
Okay, I can see about stocking the refrigerator, get this place up and running again. Is there anything you'd like from the grocery? Publix delivers, so I won't have to leave you.
Tessa shook her head. Not really. Then, Sam, I know you're acting as my guardian, but does that mean you have to monitor me 24/7? Sam stood up and walked down the few remaining stairs, putting distance between them.
Pretty much. I'm to keep you within my sight.
Surely he wasn't serious? Then again, why would Sam make light of her situation? He wouldn't. Incredulous, she replied in a tight voice. Okay, I see. She didn't really, but was not going to tell him so. She had planned on his being in the house during the day, but around the clock, no. This was going to be a problem. She had to find some way around it, and she would. She had to think and plan. She had to figure something out. It wasn't as though she had a choice.
I'm going to tell Cal he can call it a day, Sam said. He'll be driving us wherever we need to go.
Tessa's heart beat double time hearing this. Sam, where exactly does Cal live? He shifted his gaze away from her, cramming his hands in his pockets.
Here.
In my house? She asked. Knowing his statement needed no clarification, but still wanting to hear him confirm this. Around the clock? She added for no reason.
It's part of the terms of your release. The pool house has been converted to a guest house.
She took another deep breath and nodded, then could not help but wonder if any evidence had been compromised during the conversion. Sam, tell me everything. Don't bullshit me. What other terms of my release have I not been told? I need to know. Glancing around as though he were searching for an answer from some unseen source, Tessa watched him. Sam, is there more? Seriously, I need to know.
No, not really, he said a bit sheepishly.
That sounds like there is, so just tell me. She wasn't used to playing cat and mouse. In prison, dialogue was fairly succinct and straightforward, at least most of the time.
I'm to keep you within sight at all times. That's it. Cal's staying here is merely a convenience.
Sam explained. Basically, I'm not allowed any privacy. Is that it?
Tessa, I'm not going to sleep in the same room with you. I'm not going to watch you shower or take a bath. And if you want me out of the way, this is a large house with a number of rooms where I can go. I'm not a prison guard, okay?
He sounded a bit ticked off, but she didn't care. All right, she relented. But if something changes, no matter how insignificant you think it is, you'll tell me, right?
Of course I will.
She hoped he was being honest with her, but didn't tell him so. Whatever it took, she couldn't raise his suspicions. She needed time to prepare. Nodding in agreement, she spoke softly. I'd like to see the girls' rooms. Maybe go through a few of the boxes in the master bedroom. You'll take care of the groceries while I do that? Her way of telling him she wanted to be alone, and that he could do whatever he needed. Groceries, anything, it didn't matter, as long as he was out of her way.
I have got it covered, he said.
I appreciate all that you have done for me, Sam. I really do. I'm very sorry if I sounded mad at you.
I know,
he said, and headed to the kitchen. Finally, she thought. Alone. Chapter 8. About time, Tessa muttered to herself as she returned to the master bedroom. She was grateful for Sam's taking her case to Lee, but having him and Cal underfoot 24/7 was going to be tough given her plans. She would have to make adjustments. In the master bedroom, she saw the boxes against the wall and decided there was no time like the present. Before she could stop herself, she ripped the heavy-duty packing tape off easily as the tape was dry and yellowed with age. Tessa assumed these boxes had been sitting there for a very long time, possibly as long as she had been in prison. Had Sam packed the boxes himself? Did it matter who packed them? Maybe, maybe not. Removing several pieces of balled-up newspaper from the box, Tessa dropped them into a small pile on the floor. Not knowing the contents, as they weren't labeled, she took her time when she reached inside. Carefully, she removed a stack of envelopes held together with a rubber band. The return address read, "The Bank of the Cities," where they'd shared a personal checking account. Tessa sifted through a few of the statements. Seeing nothing important, she crammed the envelopes back in the box, along with the old newspapers. No point in making a mess, as she would be the one responsible for cleaning the place. Tessa thought of Rosa, and wondered what she had seen on her last day of work. Knowing she had spent more than 10 years with information that might have cleared the way for the investigation to focus solely on Liam, or at least on someone other than herself, Tessa wanted to question her privately. She added this to her mental list of people who could have made a difference, but, for reasons yet unknown to her, had chosen not to. The next box held more of the same. She flipped through several file folders, recognizing the deed to the house, car titles, and old vehicle registrations that were once kept in the glove compartment of their cars. She would ask Sam about the cars. Had they been given to charity as she had requested? She had asked her attorney to see to that, but had never followed up on it once she had been convicted. She had no use for them now anyway, because she would need another vehicle when the time was right. Tossing the box aside, she opened the third box, and was stunned when she saw what it contained. With trembling hands, Tessa removed the sheet of green construction paper, crossing the room to stand by the window where she could see clearly. A crayon drawing of a cut-out red Christmas tree was glued to the page. Yellow, orange, and purple squares of different sizes had been pasted around the tree as presents. Tears blurred her eyes as she remembered the day Poppy and Piper had brought the artwork home. It'd been their first Christmas project in preschool at St. Cecilia's. Both had been so proud and excited to show her their work. Piper had reversed her sister's work, using red paper to glue her green cutout Christmas tree on. Tessa had laughed, telling them they were twins, but polar opposites in so many ways. They'd asked her if they were polar bears. Tessa explained what she had meant, and it had confused them even more. She had told them that when they were older, they'd understand. Knowing that day would never come for her precious daughters sent a jolt of rage through her. She held the construction paper against her chest as she took several deep breaths in order to regain some semblance of calm. In time, she told herself, she would avenge their deaths. In time. She placed the paper on top of the boxes she had gone through, then continued her search. There were faded family photos, and they took her breath away. One in particular caught her eye. A weekend spent with the girls. They'd hunted for shells, finding hundreds of the little white clam shells that were so common, but each unique in its size, shape, and coloring. The girls broke out in a fit of giggles when she identified one of their finds as a kitten's paw, a fairly simple-looking shell that did look like a kitten's paw, but the name was funny to the girls. Jingle had been another shell they thought silly, and their little girl laughter had made her day. She smiled at the memory and placed the photo next to the artwork she planned to take downstairs and hang on the refrigerator door. Why not? It was her home, her children, her memories. She dabbed the tears from her eyes. It was the first memory of her girls that had actually made her smile. In the next box, several envelopes of photos with their negatives were stacked in neat rows. She put these aside for later, when she could look at her former life without rage and tears, which Tessa didn't see happening at any time in the near future. In fact, ever since her release, it had been worse, not better. In prison, one adjusted, knowing that her new life in prison was all there was. There was no real life, however long her sentence might be. Now it was different. All the emotions she had tucked away in a safe place were running rampant. "Just get through this first day," she told herself. "One minute at a time." She pushed the box aside and decided she had to search through one more before going to see the room in which she had spent so many happy days and nights. Hefting a larger box on top of another so she could see the contents as she peered inside, she pulled the yellowed tape off, then removed more rolled-up newspapers. A man's watch, one of many probably belonging to Joel, but not the Rolex he usually wore. This was a bravado, with a royal blue face and tiny diamonds representing the numbers. She didn't remember seeing this particular watch, but was sure it had belonged to him. It evoked no memory or any real emotion. She looked closer and saw the date showing on the watch. To her horror, she realized that it was the day after she had left for the mainland. It had stopped at 6:47 on Saturday, May 3rd, 2011. Had her daughters been alive then? Had Joel worn the watch while he fought for his life? Their daughters' lives? What did this mean? Or did it mean anything at all? Was she being paranoid? Maybe Joel's battery had failed and he'd switched watches. That was highly probable. Since their first date, she had rarely seen him when he was not wearing a wristwatch. He'd been extremely punctual, a trait she had admired, as she too respected others' time, and thought it quite rude to be late for any event, unless, of course, circumstances dictated otherwise. She put the watch aside as she made the decision to tell Lee. Maybe it was evidence. Hadn't all the evidence been collected already? Had this been missed? Tessa decided the watch had to be important, though she wasn't sure how. With this in mind, She used the tail of her blouse to pick up the watch and place it on the windowsill. Before she went any further, she hurried downstairs. Not bothering to give the slightest glance to the view outside, she found Sam in the kitchen. Apparently, Publix deliveries were fast, too. She had been upstairs just over an hour. "Do you have a paper bag or a storage bag of some kind?" she asked. He turned away from unpacking the groceries to stare at her.
"I think I added Ziploc bags to the list."
He rummaged through the three brown bags before finding them.
"Here you go,"
he said, handing her the entire box. "Thanks," she said, and raced out of the room before he asked her what she needed the bag for. Upstairs in the master bedroom, once again, she used her shirt tail to pick up the watch from the windowsill and drop it inside the plastic bag. Breathing a sigh of relief, she didn't know if she was being foolish, overdramatic, or just careful. Maybe a little bit of each. Tessa went back to the box, this time being more cautious as she removed the contents. A checkbook, with a brown leather cover. She flipped it open. It was a personal check, but only had Joel's name, not hers. Odd. She couldn't remember his having a personal account either. She saw that the checks were the kind that held a carbon copy of the original. Tessa tried to make out the faint letters on the carbon copies of the used checks, but they were too faded to read. She supposed it wasn't unusual for a man of Joel's profession to have a private checking account. And maybe he'd mentioned it to her, but so much time had passed she didn't remember. It wasn't important, but just for the hell of it, she added the checkbook to a fresh Ziploc bag. The rest of the items in the box were an outdated bottle of Tylenol, the red label faded to a slightly orange-yellow, a box of staples, a comb, and a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses. Nothing unusual. Tessa carried the box across the room and placed it by the window. Feeling as though she was stalling, she knew she had to do what she had come upstairs to do. She needed to see the room where Piper and Poppy had spent the last day of their young lives. Chapter 9. She stood in the hall outside Poppy's room, then walked a few steps and stood next to the door to Piper's room. How could she possibly decide which room to enter first? If she chose one over the other, wouldn't she feel a sense of betrayal? As though she favored one twin over the other? No, this was not the way she should go about this. Tessa paced back and forth, stopped, and closed her eyes. Whatever room she was closest to, she would enter first, then opened the doors to the bathroom that separated the two rooms. Her hand touched the doorknob, and she turned it, pushing the door aside. Piper's room. Hot tears instantly filled her eyes. Memories assailed her. The room was exactly as it had been the day she left. Before she could stop herself, she screamed, "Sam, you son of a bitch! How could you?" Tessa ran out of the room, not bothering to close the door. She was at the top of the stairs, and Sam met her halfway up. "Tessa," he said, and pulled her into his arms. "I wanted to warn you, but I was waiting for the right time. God, I'm sorry." She didn't bother stepping out of his embrace as sobs shook her. Of all the brutal images she had tried to erase from her mind, this was the worst. It exemplified their utter innocence, which had been so savagely taken. Pulling away from him, she wiped her nose on the sleeve of her blouse. "Why, Sam? Is there a reason?"
"Let's go downstairs. I've made a salad and a couple of omelets. We can talk down there."
He turned and headed downstairs. Trailing behind for lack of a better choice, she saw that he'd closed the automatic blinds that covered the wide expanse of windows.
"In here," he called from the kitchen.
She reached the kitchen and stood in the doorway. The island that had been added during the remodeling was set for two, with blue placemats and matching cloth napkins.
"Go on, have a seat,"
Sam said, without turning away from the stove. Tessa watched as he slid two perfectly formed, fluffy yellow omelets onto two blue plates. Looked like fiesta ware, she thought as she sat down on the bar stool.
"I hope you like spinach and mushrooms. It's kind of my specialty.
Oh, and pepper jack cheese." Tessa could not remember the last time she had eaten an omelet. "It smells delicious. I like spinach and mushrooms, just so you know." He smiled. Her heart raced a bit, but she was not going to focus on that. She would probably smile at any man who cooked for her on her first day out of prison. He removed two blue bowls from the refrigerator.
"Another one of my specialties."
He set the fruit salad next to their plates.
"I'd offer you a glass of white wine, but it's not allowed."
He filled a glass with ice and poured the tea he'd made earlier. She nodded. "Thanks. I was never much of a drinker anyway." "The salad looks awesome, just so you know. I haven't had good fresh fruit in a while." Of course, she had had fruit, but it had been out of a can.
"Strawberries, cantaloupe, kiwi, oranges, and coconut. Won't tell you my secret fruit salad sauce. If I did, I might have to kill you."
As soon as the words came out of his mouth, Tessa saw by his expression that he wished he could take them back. "It's okay, really," she offered. People used that expression all the time. "You don't have to censor your words, Sam. I won't break." He sat down on the bar stool beside her.
"Thanks. I'm sorry. That was insensitive. Let's just eat the omelets before they get cold. You eat, then we'll talk. That okay with you?"
She nodded and dug into her omelet. Tessa's mouth practically watered when she took the first bite. Sam was an excellent omelet maker. She took a bite of the fruit salad.
"Sam, this is divine!"
"The secret sauce, right?" she teased, and proceeded to finish the omelet and salad. She used the blue napkin, then took her plate and bowl to the sink.
"I take it you approve?"
Sam said, still seated at the bar. She rinsed her dishes in the sink and placed them in the ultra-fancy dishwasher.
"I can honestly say it's the best meal I've had in a decade. Thank you."
"You're welcome. Though I have to warn you, my culinary skills are limited to just a few simple dishes."
She gave up a bit of a smile. He was trying to make this easy for her. The least she could do was show him she appreciated it.
"That's a good thing, I guess, that you know your limitations.
I used to enjoy piddling around in the kitchen myself. I used to bake, as I found it relaxing. Maybe I can bake something for you and return the favor."
"I'd like that," Sam said. "Any favorites?"
Small talk. This was easy for her.
"I used to make a pretty mean Red Devil's food cake. A friend in college made it for me once, and it was the best cake I had ever had at that point in my life. She gave me her recipe. I tweaked it a bit here and there and made it my own. I suppose I could make you one. That is, if you like chocolate."
He brought his dishes to the sink and stood next to her.
"What kind of human being doesn't like chocolate?"
She stepped away from him, the closeness causing a zing and zang in places it shouldn't. "I'll make a list of the ingredients, and the next time you make a grocery order, you can get them. Are there pots and pans here? Rather, cake pans?"
"I had my secretary on Google for days ordering household necessities. I'm sure she didn't leave out anything one would normally require in the kitchen. She's very thorough."
"Let's have a look," he said, and started opening the cupboards. Tessa searched too. "Here they are," she announced when she saw a cupboard stocked with every kind of baking pan one could imagine. She is very thorough. Darlene's fantastic. That's why I keep her on, Sam explained. Out of the blue, Tessa wondered if Sam's secretary was more than just an employee.
She has three of the cutest grandsons and updates me daily on their antics. Jameson was lucky to hire her. Her husband passed away a few years ago, and he left her almost penniless. She's a true peach.
That answered that question. Maybe I'll meet her. You know, someday, if I come back to work.
Highly probable, if you ask me. Lee Whitlow is the best of the best, Tessa. He wouldn't have taken on your case if he didn't believe there was a good chance of seeing you exonerated. How about I make us a cup of coffee? Then we can talk about what you should expect when it's time for trial, among other things.
She nodded. Coffee sounds good. I hope it's not instant. She hated the bitter, watered-down version they tried to pass off as coffee in prison.
I wouldn't do that to you. I had Darlene order a Keurig, too. While it's not a French press, it's decent.
What is a Keurig? I have been out of the loop.
Sorry. It's a coffee maker that brews one cup at a time. You put these little pods in.
He removed a box from the cupboard.
Here, and press a button.
Tessa watched as the machine did its magic in a minute. Impressive. He made a second cup for himself.
You need cream or sugar?
Black is fine.
My kind of girl.
His kind of girl? Why did he continue to drop hints like that? Was she imagining things? Probably, she thought. It had been a long time since she had been on the receiving end of any male attention.
Tessa?
Sam asked.
You want to sit outside?
He handed her the cup. Not really, she thought, but she had to start somewhere. It wasn't going to make things any easier if she continued to hide inside the house. On the dock? She asked, away from the pool.
We can watch the sun go down, Sam said. No media, hopefully.
Tessa thought it best to keep her thoughts to herself where the gentle people of the press were concerned. Had she not feared the repercussions on her daughters of the media attention sure to come when she went to the police, so that she set off running to San Maribel, her life would have been quite different. Screw the media. Maybe they were watching her now, taking her picture with a telephoto lens, and her picture would be plastered on the front page of the San Maribel News Press tomorrow. Her release was sure to be front page news. Sure that he was simply trying to make her first day of freedom as relaxing as possible, given the circumstances, she forced herself to follow him through the large glass doors and out to the dock. Media or no media, damn it, this was still her home, and she had every right in the world to walk outside. The ankle monitor was cumbersome, but she assured herself she had to get used to it. The blue water of the ocean beckoned her, the briny scent bringing back memories of good times spent boating with Joel and the girls. Surprisingly, there were no tears at this memory, and that encouraged her. She would need to be rigid as hell if she was to get through the upcoming trial, more so if she was convicted a second time. Lounge chairs were placed on the large dock area, along with side tables. Sam motioned for her to sit. She put her coffee on the table, then reclined in the plush cushions. Surreal came to mind. Yesterday she had been in a prison cell, and look at her now, enjoying an almost godlike, no, it was godlike, view of the magnificent sunset. One of her favorite features of the island had always been the lighthouse perched on the very edge of the rocky shore. She had a perfect view of it from the dock, a tall spire framed against the wide sky. Looking at the familiar sight once more, she gave up a silent prayer, thankful for this moment and the opportunities facing her. She took a sip of her coffee.
This is good stuff, Sam. Very good stuff.
Coffee had never tasted this good before.
There is more where that came from, Sam said.
Tessa, I know the next few weeks aren't going to be easy for you. Lee and his team will be here tomorrow afternoon to start prepping you for a trial. I have contacted Harry Mazza. His team is the best in the state. He's quite familiar with your case. They'll be here first thing in the morning to begin their investigation. Are you good with this?
She drained the last of her coffee.
Of course I am. I'd be an idiot not to be. But I really don't think they're going to find anything.
Tessa paused, remembering the watch she had found.
Sam, there were some items in one of the boxes I went through. I'm not sure if I should even be telling you this, since it's probably nothing.
Let me decide, Sam said, all trace of his former relaxed self now gone.
I found a watch, a checkbook, and some office items. She hesitated, sure that she was making too much out of what she had found, overreacting.
Those were items I packed away when I emptied out Joel's desk at the office, Sam said. There were 5 or 6 boxes, if I remember correctly. What did you find that's bothering you?
Taking a deep breath, Tessa felt foolish. A wristwatch. I'm sure it's one that must have belonged to Joel, but I do not remember ever seeing it before.
I don't understand. Joel always wore a watch, kind of obsessive about punctuality.
He was. Come inside. I want you to see for yourself. Tessa slid out of the chair, picked up her cup, and headed toward the house. She tried to avoid looking at the elaborate pool area, but it was nearly impossible. She sneaked a look as she entered through the screened-in area. Images of that day filled her mind, but she hurried inside and ran upstairs, with Sam close behind.
"Damn, Tessa, you're in shape. I can hardly keep up with you," Sam said.
She took the Ziploc bag that held the watch and offered it to Sam. "Look at this. Then tell me what you think." Sam reached in the bag.
"Wait!"
She searched the room. "Sam, give me back the bag."
"Okay,"
he said, quickly handing it back to her. As she had done before, she used the tail of her shirt to demonstrate to Sam how to remove the watch from the bag.
"Don't touch it directly, Sam."
He nodded, and as she had done, he used the tail of his pale green shirt to remove the watch from the Ziploc bag. He walked across the room to the window, just as she had done earlier. The sun had set, leaving the room in pale pink shadows.
"Let's go in another room," Sam suggested.
"Not the twins' rooms," Tessa shouted.
"No, the guest room," Sam said.
Tessa followed him. Surprised to find the room fully furnished, she assumed this was where Sam would sleep. He turned the bedside lamp on and held the watch where he could see it clearly. Tessa could actually see the change in him as he fully grasped the watch's significance.
"Show me the box where you found this."
Sam was still holding the watch by his shirt tail. She rushed back to the master bedroom, grabbed the box, and dragged it to the guest room. "It was in here."
"Return this to the bag," Sam instructed.
He took a cell phone from his pocket, punched in a number, then walked across the room. She assumed he didn't want her to hear his conversation. It didn't matter. It was apparent she had been right about the watch.
"Harry Mazza wants to see the watch, Tessa. He's coming over right now. You okay about that?"
"The watch is important?" Tessa asked.
"Could be. Harry thinks it's worth taking a look at tonight. Frankly, I'm not sure why he can't wait until tomorrow, but I have known him too long to question his practices. You were right to bring this to me."
Sam took a deep breath.
"Do you remember if Joel was wearing this watch the day you left?" "No, forget that.
You've already told me that you did not remember his ever wearing this watch, correct?
She had racked her brain and simply couldn't remember. She told that to Sam.
That's right. Anyway, I was still in shock. The girls told me about Liam on a Wednesday. Joel was in England on business and did not get back until Thursday afternoon. I was so focused on getting them away from the media, I didn't pay much attention to him. As I said to the police, she hesitated, the day I left, my focus was on my children. Only 2 days before, they had told me that their uncle was touching them. She stopped, closed her eyes. Inhale, exhale, deep breaths. I was in a stupor. Thinking back, I know I was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, but at the time, my main concern was my girls. Tessa stared at Sam. How well did you know Liam?
Casually, at best. He wasn't involved in the day-to-day running of Jameson Pharmaceuticals. In fact, other than taking his share of the profits, he wasn't involved in the company at all. It wasn't my business.
Tessa heard more. You didn't like Liam, did you?
Sam sat on the edge of the bed.
Liam was a trust fund baby. I have never had respect for anyone, male or female, who doesn't have a work ethic. Liam was a nice enough guy, I suppose, but I never thought there was much depth to him. Does this mean I didn't like him?
Sam shook his head as though answering his own question.
I never knew him well enough to decide one way or the other.
I never liked him. There was just something about him. I could never put a name to it. It was just a feeling. He always made me uneasy. I always felt as though he looked down on me, that he considered himself superior in some way, Tessa said. He was aware of my background, and I always believed he thought I married Joel for his wealth, the way his mother had married Grant for his money. Joel believed the same thing about Liam's mother. She sat next to Sam, but made sure there was enough space between them.
Superior. A good description, Sam agreed.
Did he date? Or have a girlfriend?
She knew Sam would understand why she asked this.
I always had the impression he was somewhat of a ladies' man, Sam replied.
Tessa leaned down and adjusted her slacks. The ankle monitor caught on the material.
This is a pain, but in a good way.
Tessa, what do you want to know? I'll be as honest and upfront with you as I can be, but if you don't ask, I can't help.
So she was transparent, she thought, as she turned to face Sam. This is disgusting, but I'll ask anyway. Did he ever strike you as a pedophile? Would you have suspected him of doing what he did to my girls?
No.
How can you say that and sound so sure if you didn't really know him? I don't understand.
He did not strike me as a creepy pervert. Maybe a male whore, but I never had weird vibes in the sense that you're asking. I wish I could be more concrete in my assessment of the guy, but you asked.
She nodded. She had never picked up on any oddities in Liam either. She didn't like him. Why? He'd been arrogant, a show-off, cocky, too handsome in her opinion. But like Sam, she had not picked up on anything twisted about him, at least where children were concerned. And when she actually thought about him in relation to Piper and Poppy, he genuinely seemed to care about them, in the true sense an uncle would. She had never seen the girls' behavior change when he was around. If anything, they were more playful and outgoing when Liam came to the house. It made no sense. Tessa always reasoned that's how these sick-ass people worked. No one would suspect them, Liam,
of being a child molester. A loud banging from downstairs sent her to her feet.
That would be Harry, a bull in a china shop, Sam observed as they headed downstairs with the watch.
Wait, Tessa said, and ran back up the stairs. She grabbed the other bag with the checkbook and ran back downstairs in under a minute. He might want to see this as well, she said, a bit winded. It's a checkbook. I didn't know Joel had a personal account.
Sam took the bag from her. Another loud bang from the front door.
Stay here, Sam said. I'm sure the media hounds are out there just waiting to get a glimpse of you.
Tessa nodded. She did not want her face made public yet. Chapter 10. Harry Mazza was the spitting image of what one would describe as a science nerd. Black horn-rimmed glasses, brown hair a bit too long and in need of combing, untucked pale blue dress shirt and wrinkled slacks. Tessa recognized a kindred spirit at once, as she too had been a true science nerd in school. Sam quickly introduced them.
"Yeah, good to meet you, lady. Now where's that watch?"
he asked Sam.
"I'll need to send it to the lab tonight."
If circumstances had not been so dire, Tessa would have laughed at Harry Mazza. He had no manners whatsoever. But circumstances were dire, and no laughing matter. Sam handed Harry the Ziploc bag with the watch in it, along with the bag containing the checkbook. Harry, in turn, took a blue glove from his pocket, snapped it on his right hand, then removed the watch from the bag. He inspected it for several minutes, then took a small magnifying glass from another pocket. Taking his time, he inspected the watch at some length.
"I'm going to make an educated guess here, but unless I am mistaken, this watch received a hard blow that made it stop. I can't be 100% sure until we examine it at the lab, but that's my gut impression."
Tessa looked at Sam, then at Harry. "With all due respect, Mr. Mazza, that can't be right. Sam took that watch from Joel's desk after his death."
"Could be, but until we examine it in the lab, I am sticking to what my gut says. That watch stopped when it was hit or dropped."
"Sam?" Tessa looked to him for an explanation.
"I'm not an expert in forensics. As Harry says, let's wait until it's properly examined."
Tessa walked into the kitchen, not caring that it was rude. What Harry Mazza implied could not be possible. Sam found that watch at the office in Joel's desk. After his death. And the watch had stopped on Saturday, when she was already in San Maribel, and according to the evidence introduced at the trial, the murder had occurred on Friday, before she had gone to San Maribel. Sam had to be mistaken. He'd said there were 5 or 6 boxes from Joel's office. She needed to find them and search for the watch that Sam had actually found in Joel's desk. A stopped watch with the date of her family's murder was impossible. It literally could not have been in Joel's desk. Sure that Sam was mistaken, she returned to the living room, where the two men were deep in conversation. She doubted they'd even registered that she had left the room.
"Excuse me," she said. "Sam, where are the other boxes you took from Joel's office? Nothing has been marked."
"I brought all the boxes here. Right after the trial, a month or so, if memory serves me correctly. I'm sure I labeled them."
"No, you couldn't have. None of the boxes I searched had any type of writing on them. To be frank, I found it odd they weren't labeled."
Sam looked perplexed. Harry peered out the front window.
"I'm leaving. The mob looks like it's calling it a night out there. You need to get some security, Sam."
"I did, Harry. I'm not that dense," Sam added. "Just get this to your lab and let me know the results as soon as you can.
I'm guessing we have 6 to 8 weeks before the trial.
I'll have it long before then. I'll send my crew out first thing in the morning, but I don't want the media crawling around while they work. It distracts them, and as you well know, it only takes one little distraction to throw an entire case down the tubes.
Harry held Sam's gaze.
I understand, Sam stated. Thank you for coming over so quickly.
Tessa's very grateful, too. He turned to look at her, raised his brows, and nodded in Harry's direction.
Oh, of course. I am very thankful. It's very kind of you to battle your way through that.
Tessa directed her gaze to the window.
I'll see you two later,
Harry said, then let himself out. Sam locked the door as soon as he left.
What security? Tessa asked. You said nothing to me about security. Is Cal your security?
Part of it. Tessa, surely you didn't think I wouldn't take precautions for your safety. You're major news, and there are those out there who disagree vehemently with the court's decision to let you out on bond, no matter how high.
There is more than Cal? This news could ruin her plans. She had not given security the first thought, which showed just how poor her planning was, though she had yet to actually act on her so-called plans, if you could call what she had been pondering plans at this stage. This news of security shed a whole new light on everything she had hoped to accomplish over the next few weeks.
Of course there is more than Cal. He is just one man. We have hired some of the best in the business. Lee and I discussed this and agreed it was best for your safety.
And neither of you thought to inform me?
Does it really matter? You want to be safe? Do you want to enjoy your freedom once the trial is over?
Sam was pissed. She knew, but couldn't care less.
You and Lee are too confident, Sam. I don't like that at all. I know you're full of good intentions, but it would have been decent of you to consult with me first.
We had your best interest in mind. I never thought extra security would be an issue with you, and I still do not see why it is.
He paused.
Unless you have plans I'm not aware of?
She sat down on the bottom step, needing to compose herself and put her game face on. Maybe she needed to come clean with Lee. After all, he was her attorney, and they were legally bound to silence. No, she couldn't tell him of her plan. She knew from being surrounded with jailhouse lawyers that if your attorney knew you were about to commit a crime, he or she was legally bound to report you to the authorities.
Tessa, why don't you tell me the reason you're objecting to your own safety? I hope you're not planning something foolish.
If he only knew the visions that had gone through her mind the past 2 months since learning of her new trial. With an unlimited amount of money at her disposal, all she needed to do was put the right people on her payroll, and she would see to it that justice was served. Liam Jameson could not have fallen off the face of the earth. There were ways to locate those who didn't want to be located. This was one of the many lessons she had learned while in prison. It was one hell of a place for rehabilitation, she always thought. She heard of ways to get around the criminal justice system and not get caught. Though considering from whom she was hearing about it, they obviously weren't foolproof. If they were, she would not be hearing it from people in prison. Liam Jameson had to know his way around the criminal justice system, or he would be serving 3 life sentences instead of her. Bastard.
Tessa?
Sam said, jolting her from her reverie. She had instantly come up with an explanation.
I've been surrounded by guards for over a decade, Sam. Surely you, of all people, understand my surprise to learn that that hasn't changed. From my point of view, the only difference is that I'm now a prisoner in my own home.
He scrunched up beside her.
Tessa, you knew the terms of your release. The ankle monitor doesn't keep you safe. I took that responsibility when I agreed to act.